Hello, hello. I am Matt Williams. This is the Locked On NFL Podcast. Well, actually, it is the Locked On Giants and Locked On NFL Podcast. We have Ed Valentine here from the Locked On Network, and we're just doing a joint show talking Giants, probably NFC East, whatever else crosses our noodle today. Ed, how's it going, man?
It's good, Matt. Hey, you know, thanks for inviting me to do this. Always fun to talk to you. Always fun to talk a little football. So, you know, we'll see where this goes today.
Yeah, I'm excited. So, my listeners, I obviously urge you to check out the Giants, you know, podcast, especially if you're into the Giants, obviously.
Please.
But, yeah, absolutely. Here's my take, broad strokes, of this team. And I look at teams like Kansas City, Detroit, and my thoughts on those teams with the Giants are, I want to start all my fantasy players in all their games because I just think it's going to be lots of offense with those teams, a lot of questionable defense, and I'm not sure that everyone looks at the Giants offense in that manner, but I think it has a chance to be really good.
Well, you know, I happen to agree with you, and it's a really sort of odd thing at this point because you look at the New York Giants, and they didn't score 30 points in a game in the 2 years that Ben McAdoo was head coach. So you look at them and you think, busted offense, terrible. But then you go up and down the roster, two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback, and we can argue that he's past his prime. You know, there are people out there who will tell you, you know, he never had a prime and he was lucky to win two Super Bowls. And,
right.
You know, we can argue about Eli Manning and what he is and what he isn't, you know, all day. But look up and down that roster. You have a healthy Odell Beckham. You have Saquon Barkley, who from everything I've seen in the training camp practices and the spring practices that I've been to, you know, Saquon Barkley is a really good running back, but Saquon Barkley is completely uncoverable in the passing game. I watched the Giants line him up out, you know, they motioned him out of the backfield and had him a one-on-one matchup with Janoris Jenkins, who's a really good cornerback, and Janoris Jenkins had no chance.
Wow.
in a man-to-man situation. Jenkins had no chance. And, you know, he's going to be just a massive weapon in the passing game. Evan Engram, Sterling Shepard, you know, a rebuilt offensive line, which if it's even incrementally better than what they had last year, that's an offense that's going to put up a ton of points.
I think we're in agreement there, and here's been my takes on that situation is maybe Eli's not the best driver of the football down the field anymore, but like Big Brother, I think he is exceptional above the shoulders, especially pre-snap and knowing where blitzes are coming from, and I've been comparing him to John Stockton, you know, that I just think it's going to be a lot of get it out quick or come to the line of scrimmage. Find a matchup or two with Engram, Shepard, Beckham, Barkley, in the passing game in particular, that he likes. Get it out quick. Let those guys operate after the catch. You know, like you said, Barkley is a supreme receiver, and then getting him on the field or on the ground after the reception is going to be the real chore. And then, you know, Odell was legendary for taking slants to the house, and Engram for a tight end is so good after the catch that I just think it's going to be an up-tempo Manning's head and just distributing the football to all these guys.
Oh, I happen to agree. I think that, you know, Eli, for whatever faults he has, this is the thing that I've said for a long time, you know, is that I really appreciate what he does at the line of scrimmage. And you're absolutely right. If you walk up to the line of scrimmage and you've got all of those guys on the field, there's going to be a mismatch someplace.
Yes, there has to be.
There has to be. And you don't have to have a rocket arm, you know, and Eli, incidentally, has thrown the ball pretty darn well so far this spring and so far this summer. I mean, some of his deep balls will wobble a little bit, but he can still get the ball out there more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a matter
of anticipation, too. He makes up for it.
It's a matter of finding the matchup, finding the mismatch, you know, finding the weak the weak link in coverage and getting the ball out there. And that's what excites me about that, about the possibilities on that offense. The defense, as you indicated, you know, for me, the defense is still the major, major question mark. I don't know. I still have questions about the pass rush. I have questions about the depth at corner. Shoot, I have questions about the two starting corners. You know, I have questions at free safety next to Landon Collins. So there's question marks for me all over that defense.
Yeah, I want to get to the defense in a minute. But even on offense, to take it a step further, and this is why I think Barkley is absolutely worth the second overall pick, is, okay, let's say you come out with a lot of defensive backs, and you actually have, as a defense, you have some matchups, or for the most part, you're doing a decent job matching up against those four supreme weapons. And even though the Giants' offensive line isn't great, but if you come out and dime against their base personnel just so you can match up against Ingram and Barkley, well, then you just hand it to them.
Well, this is, you know, Matt, I don't know if you saw the preseason game the other night with the Giants and Browns. And this was the thing, you know. You know, Eli Manning was funny after the game because, you know, Barkley had the 39-yard run on his first carry, and Eli was like, you know, let's not go berserk. It was just one run.
Right.
But the thing about it was, you know, it's a prime example of what he can do in the running game, because he basically, he made his own hole on that play. You know, because where the play was intended to go, there was nothing there. He made a jump cut in the hole, you know, and found himself on the backside of the play. And then all of a sudden he finds himself in the secondary. So you're absolutely right. If you're going to play nickel, if you're going to play five defensive backs, you know, against the Giants, they're just going to turn around and hand the ball to Barkley.
Right. You're behind Solder and Hernandez. And, you know, Flowers is obviously a liability, but he's a big mauling guy, and you don't have to be supremely gifted along the offensive line to exploit those type of matchups when you have numbers in your favor.
No, and I look at, you know, I'll make a quick comment about Eric Flowers.
Yeah.
You know, Eric Flowers was, you know, in my view, he's a disaster at left tackle.
Sure.
And in my view, you know, Jerry Reese's insistence on trying to prove that he wasn't wrong in keeping Flowers at left tackle, that's one of the things that led to Reese no longer being the GM there. And, you know, whatever problems Eric Flowers has, you know, had on the left side, he's bringing with him to the right side. But the Giants were playing Bobby Hart and Chad Wheeler at right tackle last year. So whatever problems Eric Flowers had, you know, Nate Solder's better at left tackle than Flowers, and Flowers is better than what they were playing at right tackle last year. So he's an upgrade.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way of looking at it. I mean, I do agree with you. I mean, I don't think either one of us are saying he's a star or, you know, you're happy with that pick or anything. But I'm with you when you say it that way, that both their tackle positions now are better than when we saw them last.
Right.
Yeah, agreed. So, real quick, I just want to take a second and tell our audience, we have a new sponsor that is only for Locked On NFL right now, but it just shows how much our network is growing. It's at The Athletic, and I'm sure a lot of you guys have heard about The Athletic, and all you New York fans out there should be all over this, because they cover every sport from a localized perspective. And if you go to theathletic.com/LockedOnNFL, all one word, lowercase, you get 40% off your first year subscription for The Athletic, and that's stealing. It's something you got to do. So, you know, if you want national coverage, that's covered. They handle all sports. They're absolutely, the New York feel for this group is really, really strong. I know Mark Caboli, their Steeler beat writer, really well. Just spent basically the last 3 weeks with him at some local water holes and as well as some practice facilities. He does a great job. He raves about the entire staff. So The Athletic is a subscription-based publisher of smarter sports coverage for diehard fans. The Athletic's model is simple. There's no ads, there's no pop-ups, there's no autoplay videos. Instead, readers subscribe for authentic, in-depth coverage written by journalists who know their teams inside and out. Coverage will go beyond game recaps and trade speculation to provide smarter analysis and a deeper perspective about teams and the league. Subscribers have access to local and national content with, this was crazy, more than 650 news stories published every week across all sports. That's a ton of content. Subscribe and be part of the future of sports journalism. They're just great writers at this group. Alongside all this great local talent, The Athletic also provides in-depth coverage of the NFL at a conference and national levels, and there's more of that to come. So again, go to theathletic.com/lockedonNFL, all one word, all lowercase, and you'll save 40% off your first year subscription. So it's just $2.99 a month, which is like nothing. And this is something you got to do right now. So another sponsor for the Locked On Network there, Ed. We're rolling along, buddy.
You know what, Matt? I'm not a big believer in paying for content. You know, there's so much out there on the internet that's sure. that's free and that's quality. But I've got an Athletic subscription, and it's well worth it. I mean, you're talking about quality writers. You know, no matter what your fan base, no matter what your team interest is, you'll find absolute quality coverage. And it's worth a couple bucks a month easily.
Yeah, I mean, even if you only do your team, it's absolutely worth it. But, I mean, I'm thinking from a Giants perspective, I'd read up on the Eagles, the Redskins, the Cowboys, whoever's coming to town that week. So, yeah, I mean, check it out. Let's talk defense. Give me your...
Let's do that.
All right, you mentioned it briefly. I'm really worried about the defense. You know, like, I think those defensive tackles do a great job stopping the run, and that has value. But less value than ever. Where does that pass rush come from? You know, JPP is gone. Olivier Vernon, along with JPP, have played so many snaps over the last couple of years that I think he's now a number two guy, and there isn't a number one around. We're going through a scheme change here. They have historically neglected the second level of their defense, and this year I actually think that's changing. But I'm not sure Alec Ogletree is quite as good as his name value suggests. Love Landon Collins. Still in the Janoris Jenkins corner. I still have some faith for Eli Apple, but certainly coming off some rough waters there. And like you said, the corner depth and secondary depth is a little questionable too.
Yeah, you know, it's like when I think about the defense, it's like, where do I begin in breaking this down? It's... You know, and I guess what we'll do is we'll go level by level.
Yeah, let's do that.
You know, so, you know, defensive line-wise, you're absolutely right. The Giants played Olivier Vernon and Jason Pierre-Paul into the ground the last couple of years. Dave Gettleman, you know, was adamant, you know, this offseason that he didn't want to do that. He wanted to build some depth. He drafted, you know, B.J. Hill, who has actually, you know, stepped up. It looks like he'll be a starter on that three-man line, which, you know, they're putting together a starting defensive line of Dalvin Tomlinson, you know, Damon Harrison, and B.J. Hill, which I did the math. That's 369 pounds of beef that teams are going to have to try to run against on first down. And, you know, and that's you know, a lot, but... But the problem is...
Can I stop you real quick? And maybe this is where you're going. I apologize. But that sounds wonderful, especially if it's 1985. But who are the interior pass rushers? Do they project Hill to do that?
Well, they hope. But see, that's the problem. That's where I was going. It's like they just don't have anyone who's an interior pass rusher. You know, they're hoping that those guys can get some push. They're hoping that Olivier Vernon, you know, makes a Chandler Jones-esque transition to linebacker, and he's looked really good. They're hoping that Connor Barwin still has, you know, something left in the tank. They're hoping that third-round pick Lorenzo Carter, you know, steps up. He's got the athleticism, you know, steps up and becomes a pass-rushing force. You know, so – and they're hoping – that scheme-wise, you know, James Betcher, who loves his blitz packages, you know, can create pressure, you know, with his schemes. And so, you know, so it's like a fingers crossed, we hope we can rush the passer kind of thing. And I'm not sure it's going to get the job done.
Yeah, and that was very well said and obviously well thought out, and you're on top of this team, of course. And Carter has a lot of upside, but he's not real developed as a football player. I don't see any natural interior pass rushers. I do think the Becher hire is a great one, and I do think he'll scheme up pressure. And like you said, we hope, they hope, they hope. And if half of those hopes hit, maybe this is better than we think. But usually the NFL, things go bad before they go good. And I got to think that next offseason is going to be all about the defense.
Well, I think that the Giants sort of started in that direction already, Matt. You know,
That's true.
they took Sam Beal in the NFL supplemental draft, and they took Beal knowing, I think, that he had a shoulder issue, knowing that, that there was a chance that he may not play this year, and as it works out, he's not going to play this year. He's on IR because he did, re-injure the shoulder. They looked at Beal really as a 2019 draft pick,
And still holds up that way, even though he got hurt.
and it still holds up
Yeah.
that way. So you can see that they're looking at 2019. They're looking long term. I say this to Giants fans all the time. You had a 3-13 team last year, and even when you're 8-8, 9-7, whatever you are, you assess your team at the end of the season. You have one draft with six or seven picks. You have one shot at free agency, and you lose some guys too.
Sure.
You simply can't fix every hole. You can't make every spot on the roster. You can't perfect every spot on the roster. You have a limited amount of time, and you have a salary cap to worry about. So you do the best you can. Dave Gettleman calls, roster building a 12-month deal, and you just can't fix every issue in one off season. You just kind of have to cross your fingers and hope that the areas that you don't fill perfectly, don't really come back and bite you. And the Giants still have a few of those.
They do. And I just see, in a perfect world, sure, they would have added more O-line help. And I like Kyle Laletta, but they obviously would have been great if you could have added a, more sure bet future quarterback. And I think a lot of places on defense, and including this back seven. I mean, what are your thoughts overall? Are you with me that Landon Collins remains a great player? And then I'm not sure about the rest.
I would agree with that. I think that, if we go, we'll go to the secondary. We'll leave the linebacker level for last
Okay.
since we've gone to Landon Collins. I think Landon Collins is a tremendous player with one flaw that the Giants really have to work around. Landon Collins can be abused if you put him up in man-to-man coverage against a really good tight end or a really good running back. But if you can put him in situations where he can attack the football, where he's not, out on an island in coverage, then he's a fantastic player. The problem is you can go through the entire rest of the secondary and you have questions about everybody else.
Yeah, agreed. And I wonder if they'll look at Collins kind of like they looked at Deion Buchanan with Arizona and try to keep him out of those situations. And he was clearly miscast sometimes as a single high safety as a rookie, which is really putting a square peg in a round hole.
Oh, I agree with that. I've seen him, and you never know what you're actually looking at sometimes when you're watching spring practices and early training camp practices, because coaches try things. They try things that they may not intend to use. I've seen Collins all over the formation. We've seen him single high sometimes. We've seen him down in the box. I think that they'll move him around just like they'll move Olivier Vernon around. To try
Sure.
to maximize the top tier talent that they do have. But, I look at, we talked about Janoris Jenkins and Eli Apple. Jenkins had a Pro Bowl year with the Giants in 2016, but he had an injury-filled, sort of dissension-filled 2017. He got suspended, for a game because after their bye week, he basically decided not to show up
Right.
when the Giants returned to practice. Didn't bother to tell anybody, didn't show up. So, I mean, I look at Janoris Jenkins You know, and I still have a question because he played, I think, 5 years with the Rams, was never a Pro Bowl player. I still have a question in my mind as to how good he is. Is he really that guy, you know, that the Giants saw in 2016? Or is he just, you know, a talented guy who doesn't, you know, play to his talent level? And, you know, Eli Apple's been better attitude-wise, you know, this spring and summer. But we still, even if you get past his attitude and if his head is on straight, we still have to find out how good he actually is.
Right, right. Like Jenkins, you know, can be great. You don't know that yet about Apple.
Right. Jenkins can be great. The question is, there's been a lot more, I'll just say, there's been a lot more less than great throughout his career mm-hmm. than there has been great. So I still have a question as to what I'm going to get.
How about the rest of the secondary? Is there any names that maybe the national audience doesn't know, or is it just I'm kind of worried?
Well, you know what the Giants have done at corner, and they've kind of done it at safety too. It's like, you know, you just collect like a bunch of guys, and you throw things at the wall, and whatever sticks happens to stick. Mm-hmm. And that's been their approach, at corner. I mean, Curtis Riley's a guy who was a backup cornerback in Tennessee for a couple of years. And if you had to ask me right now, I think Curtis Riley's the starting free safety.
Hmm.
You know, which, I mean, Darian Thompson's been a disappointment.
Right.
Had a rough game the other night against Cleveland, and he's hurt now. I mean, the other guys that they have, Andrew Adams and Michael Thomas, are really, really nice, you know, special teams players and can do some things for you on the, you know, in sub packages and things on defense, but I'm not sure you want either one of those guys on the field full time. And they have a lot of the same kind of deal at cornerback. They have William Gay, who, you know, I look at William Gay, he's 33 years old, he's in his 12th season. Guy's had a really nice career, but
I'm very familiar with him. I mean, I do tons of Steeler stuff, and he's smart and tough and two steps slow now.
Well, I look at it this way. He was with the Steelers for 11 years. The Steelers barely played him last year and basically told him they didn't want him, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of last season. And when a team you've been with for that long shows you the door, I think it tells you where you're at in your career. So, you know, so the Giants just have a collection of question marks at corner and at safety other than Landon Collins. And, you know, you cross your fingers and you hope that they get, you know, competent play because, you know, going back to James Betcher and going back to having to scheme to get pass pressure, you are putting tremendous pressure on your secondary because sure. you're leaving them one-on-one, you're asking them to cover. You know, you're asking them to hold up on their own, and I'm not sure the Giants have the guys who are going to be able to do it.
Yeah, the 2 years ago version of Janoris Jenkins could be his Patrick Peterson, you know, and Apple right. could be better than any of the number twos they had in Arizona. But they are going to be challenged dramatically, and just in the overall theme, questionable pass rush, questionable secondary, goes back to my original point, this team's going to be in some shootouts.
I think so. You know, and we didn't really talk about the linebackers yeah. very much, but you mentioned Alec Ogletree. And, you know, what I liked about the Alec Ogletree trade was less about bringing in Alec Ogletree than it was about the fact that, oh, good Lord, the Giants actually traded to get a linebacker.
Right, they did something, you know, at this position.
They did something.
Right.
They actually used resources to go out and get a linebacker. The question that I think we all have is, did they actually get a good one who's going to be worth the big contract that he has? And I'm not sure the answer to that's going to be yes.
I agree with you, but it is an upgrade. You know, on Sundays, you'll be happy he's there compared to what you've had. And we know Gettleman's history. I mean, Carolina's the most linebacker-centric team in the league. But don't go, hey, Giants fans, don't go think that you got your Luke Kuechly.
No, you didn't. But as you said exactly, you look at what they had, you know, and if you look at it and say, okay, they didn't have much, They gave up, I think, a fourth and sixth round draft pick to get Alec Ogletree. Are they actually going to get that kind of play out of a fourth or a sixth round draft pick in 2018? The answer is probably no. Right. So you did upgrade, you know, but you didn't turn your linebacking core with, you know, with Alec Ogletree and Kareem Martin, you know, and a developing Lorenzo Carter. If he turns into a player, you didn't all of a sudden, you know, turn it into, you know, that group that the Steelers had, you know, way back when.
No, yeah, you're right. And I assume Ogletree will have the green dot and have the microphone in his helmet.
I believe that's how, yeah. I believe that's how the Giants are going to do it. You know, BJ Goodson, who will play next to Ogletree, had that last year. Mm-hmm. The plan at this point is for Ogletree to call the defense.
Cool. Well, Ed, this has been awesome. If there's anything you want to ask me on a national level or about the rest of the division, or if there's anything else on your noodle, feel free. And so it's all yours. Otherwise, we can wrap it up. Whatever you want to do.
Well, the only thing I was going to ask you is, I mean, we know what the Eagles are. You know, we know they're good. We know they're going to be good. They should be good for, you know, for the foreseeable future with the, you know, with the young star quarterback. You know, it's scary when you have the team in your division that won the Super Bowl and they won the Super Bowl without their young star quarterback, you know, on the field. I mean, we know the Redskins are up and down and it's like they are what they are. You know, I want to ask you, you know, before we call it a show, just quickly, you know, what do you think of the Dallas Cowboys heading into this year? Because I just never know what to make out of the Cowboys.
Yeah, and before we do, I guess it just kind of dawned on me that if I'm looking at this division through the Giants' eyes, boy, Washington just lost Geis, which I think is a massive problem for them. And I talked about that a couple podcasts ago. Just comes out that Alshon Jeffery is going to be on the PUP list probably for the first 6 weeks, and Wentz might not start the season. I mean, those are massive undertakings. I talked about that on yesterday's show. I still think that the Eagles are clearly the team to beat in the division, and then it's a fight for number two. But I think that Redskins injury was gigantic. As for the Cowboys, I look at them and think, this defense looks better. They're really well coached on that side of the ball. If Sean Lee can stay healthy, this should be a pretty good defense and the best defense they've had in a while. I very much believe that that offensive line is still absolutely elite. And they added Connor Williams, you know, who's a good prospect. Tyron Smith absolutely has to stay healthy. I look at Dak and think, his rookie year, I thought he was a little overrated. His second year, I thought he was a little underrated. Because Witten, Dez, no one could get separation. I mean, Dak had to do everything himself in the passing game. And, you know, didn't do it as in glorious fashion as he did as a rookie, but it was a much harder climb for him. And Elliott wasn't always there to lean on. But in the end, I got two big problems with the Cowboys offense. Obviously, the lack of weapons is disturbing. I mean, I think them and Buffalo are clearly the worst group of receivers in the league, including tight end. And it's really bad. I mean, I have little faith in that group, which means a lot of eight-man boxes. But compounding the problem, I look at Dallas and think they're one of the worst coach teams in the league, especially on the offensive side of the ball and reflection of Garrett. And my biggest problem is Zeke Elliott comes to the league, well-known, coming out of Ohio State. This guy is an advanced player in the passing game. Not to the Barkley level, but for 3 years ago, this is one of the better prospects we've seen from a pass blocking and receiving standpoint. And they don't use it. You know, like, if you're going to use a top five pick on a back like the Giants just did, which go back 25 minutes in our conversation, use the guy as a receiving mismatch. And they never do. And if they don't do it this year with their putrid weapons, I just don't understand it at all.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. But I mean, we all know that the guy who makes the real decisions, right, you know, in Dallas is not the guy on the sidelines.
True.
So true. I don't have anything else for you, Matt. I just, you know, I can never figure out the Cowboys. You know, the only other thing I will say about the Giants per se is that I don't know if you've had an opportunity to get to Giants camp yet to see any of the Giants, but I have really liked what Pat Shurmur has done with this team. Mm-hmm. They've been in pads a ton. They're doing something really interesting tomorrow. You know, they're in Detroit this week practicing with the Lions, and tomorrow, instead of having a day off or a walkthrough, you know, which is what teams usually do the day before games,
right,
they're going to go with a full 2/3 speed practice.
Oh, really?
And they're actually going to go, which I think is probably going to be heavy on the young players, heavy on the second and third team guys. You know, so just to get them extra reps. But this team's been in pads so much and done, you know, so much good football type work, you know, which we haven't seen the past few years in training camps for the Giants, that I feel really good that this team, you know, which has a brutal schedule early in the season.
Really rough.
Yeah, I know they start with Jacksonville and they have the Texans early, and I don't have the whole schedule in front of me, but it's brutal. But I feel better about this team's preparedness entering the season just because of the way that their program's been run through the spring and the summer.
Yeah, you probably don't know this, but Ben McAdoo and I are friends. We were GAs together at Pitt many moons ago, and so I've always been rooting for him, obviously, and he's truthfully the hardest working person in this business I've ever been around. That being said, the coaching change absolutely had to happen, and from everything you're telling me, that culture change is in effect, and my hunch is it's going to have positive effects on Apple, Jenkins, guys like that that maybe, you know, had a hard time playing up for their coach last year.
Sure. You know, the issue is going to be, you know, as we talked about, you can't fix every hole on a roster. Sure. You know, in one off season, you know, even if they, which I believe they have, I believe the culture's a lot better. What we'll find out is how good is the roster, and is that defense going to be good enough, you know, to make it so that they don't have to score 35 or 40 points every week to win.
Agreed. I think they can score over 30 per week, but I think they're going to have to. So take that how you want.
Well, you know, something's gonna be wrong if they go through another season without scoring 30 points in a game.
No, you're right. You're right. Ed, this was an absolute blast. Please tell my fans your Twitter account. Please, they can follow you, and they absolutely should check out Locked On Giants, of course.
That's at Big Blue View, which is the place where you'll find me most of the time. Would appreciate your jumping in and giving Locked On Giants a listen as well. And you know, Matt, we're always happy to chat with you. NFL stuff, Giants stuff, anytime.
Absolutely. Let's do this again in the near future.
All right, thanks.